Today's broadcast was originally recorded on September 17th, 2025.
Leaders cannot call their political opponents Nazis and fascists and enemies of the state because they disagree with their policy priorities. I mean, this is something we should have learned in grade school.
We have the enemy outside, which would be the very standard countries, and we have the enemy from within. We have some very sick people from within. It is the enemy from within, and they're very dangerous. They're Marxists and communists and fascists. But, you know, we do have an enemy from within. We have some very bad people, and we have to be careful of that. It's the enemy from within, all the scum that we have to deal with that hate our country. That's a bigger enemy than China and Russia. But the enemy from within is a very sick group of people.
This type of language spurs on depraved people, deranged people, who take that as a cue.
Hey, Mike Johnson. Have you talked to your depraved president lately?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Just asking.
I got the feeling there's something right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet. So the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. Delighted to have you all here. Delighted to have Desi Doyen here. Hello, Desi Doyen.
Hello.
Also delighted to be joined momentarily by, yes, our old friends Digby and Driftglass, who are they standing by, Desiree?
Yes, they are.
They're here for the whole hour, are they?
Yes, they are.
Excellent. So let me begin here before they join us to save us all. No pressure, guys. Let's see. We usually don't cover polling in any great extent on this show unless it's tied to a specific point that we are covering. But a Pew Research Center report said last month that Donald Trump's job approval at the time stood at just 38%, with 60% of U.S. adults expressing disapproval of his performance, putting him about 22 points underwater with the American people. More interesting, perhaps, were the crosstab findings that among all voters between the ages of 18 to 34, Trump's job approval rating had dropped last month 8 percentage points between February and August. But among Trump voters of the same age group, his approval rating actually dropped 23 points, the largest drop in any age group of his supporters, 23 points. So his support dropped almost three times as much among his own voters, his own supporters, as it did overall among all Americans in that age group, which I find fascinating and perhaps telling. If I were Donald Trump, and as far as I know, I am not, I would be a bit worried about that data point. But of course, that was before the horrific murder of Republican activist Charlie Kirk last week, a racist, sexist, homophobic, anti-Semitic Islamophobe who, despite all of that, decidedly did not deserve to be killed. He's also someone who led the Get Out the Vote effort for the Trump campaign last year, particularly among young voters. And on that point, he did very well in lifting turnout among those younger voters. And he had a huge fan base among them, witnessed by the fact that some 3,000 of them turned out for his appearance last week at Utah Valley University, where he was killed during one of his Prove Me Wrong debates with students on the campus. Such appearances have been proffered by many on the right, and too many, frankly, in the corporate mainstream media, as evidence of Kirk's championing of free speech. And, at least in his personal appearances, well, he did welcome such free speech and debate. But it should also be noted at the same time, as we have on this show a number of times since the shooting, that Charlie Kirk made his bones as a right-wing activist by encouraging his student followers to secretly tape their school teachers and college professors in order to use their often out of context free speech in class against them in hopes of getting them fired. Nonetheless, while there has been an outpouring of support for Kirk in the wake of his death, that does not yet seem to show itself in what one might expect as sort of a rally round the flag response to his most powerful longtime ally, Donald Trump. Donald Trump's second term approval rating has dipped to a new low in a weekly poll from The Economist and YouGov, according to Newsweek today. The overall drop in approval is driven in part, they say, by declines among independents and Hispanics and weak marks on key issues like the economy and immigration. Pollsters and analysts say the trend underscores persistent polarization and voter unease among voters, particularly outside of the president's core Republican base. In the poll released on Tuesday, Trump's approval rating is now at 39%, with a disapproval rating of 57%. But this poll was taken from September 12 to September 15, in the days that followed Kirk's killing. Quote, the 39% of Americans who approve of Trump is the lowest share to do so in any weekly Economist YouGov poll in Trump's second term, YouGov told Newsweek. The 57% who disapprove is the most to do so in the Trump second term, they added. The poll finds Trump's approval rating is also underwater on key issues like jobs and the economy, inflation and prices, immigration, civil rights, crime, and guns. The president's approval rating with the pollster last week, in other words, before the shooting, was 2 points higher at 41% with a 54% disapproval rating, 3 points lower than his rising disapproval rating this week, which is at 57 in this particular poll. Notably, Newsweek observes that this is the pollster's first survey gauging the public on Trump's approval since the killing of Charlie Kirk. Now, Donald Trump and his Republican Party have, from pretty much the moment that Kirk was shot, before he had even been pronounced dead, declared war on the left, whoever that may be, who they, without evidence, either then or now, claim to be responsible for this tragedy, just as they declared the Democrats responsible for the attempt on Donald Trump's life last year in Butler, Pennsylvania, an attempt made by a registered Republican. But as cynical as such an effort is, it does not seem, at least according to this early polling, does not seem to be reflected in a rally round the flag response for Donald Trump, at least as one might have predicted. Will that happen? Well, I guess it's too early to know, but this initial polling does not suggest as much. And what seems to be the unpopularity around the Trump administration's response to the shooting, with his own Attorney General Pam Bondi, for example, being pretty much pilloried by folks on both the left and the right, following her comments she made this week about rounding up and cuffing anyone who dares to use what she characterizes as hate speech regarding Charlie Kirk and I guess anybody else, well, it does not seem likely that the party or the administration will be seeing such a rally round the flag response in what they are clearly and yes, cynically hoping to turn into their 9/11 moment. To turn Trump's fortunes around, they hope, just as the terror attacks back in 2001 did for then-President George W. Bush, who was similarly flailing in his approval ratings during the first 8 months of his presidency at the time. Joining us now to try and make sense of all of this, somehow, and much more, are our old OG blogger pals, Heather Digby Parton, the award-winning blogger and columnist at Salon and Hullabaloo, and the man known mostly as Just Driftglass, though sometimes we call him Bill. He is the creator of the Driftglass blog and co-host of the weekly Professional Left podcast, produced from his home in what he describes as flyover country, Illinois. Hey, welcome back, both of you, to the show, guys.
Hello, everyone.
Delighted to have you here. We've got a lot to get to since your previous appearance with us a month or so ago, certainly with a horrific Kirk shooting, but much more beyond that as well, as time allows. But we do need to start with this, with the continuing fallout from the Kirk shooting, because it really is beginning to feel, at least to me, in more ways than one, like the sort of the post 9/11 period, or at least the administration hopes to make us feel like that, I think, with their threats to go against the so-called organized left radicals that the Donald Trump and his administration immediately began blaming for Kirk's killing. Heather Digby Parton, let me start with you. Am I off base with that comparison as you see it?
I don't think so. I think you're right on base with that. That certainly was my impression as well. And, you know, this isn't surprising simply because they've been telegraphing this since Donald Trump started running back in 2022, that they were going to go after, quote, the left and his enemies and the enemies of the state and all the rest of this. So, after the Kirk shooting, there were people on social media, MAGA people, who were just saying it out loud. This is our Reichstag fire, mm-hmm. looking for that moment that they could use as an excuse to do what they always were going to do anyway.
And it wasn't just random. Let me just say, it was not just random people on the right saying that. It was actually, supporters of Donald Trump with huge followings, people that he retweets and so forth, that were basically declaring war. And, these are people who have a huge following, thanks in no small part to folks like Donald Trump.
Absolutely. And these are people who, use those huge platforms that they had to start targeting people online who they, said were celebrating or being, insufficiently reverent toward Charlie Kirk, and getting them fired. And there have been people all over the country who've been fired, suspended, lost their jobs over their reactions on social media. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, so much for free speech, right? But that's kind of the first step mm-hmm. that you take in this. And you're right. After 9/11, you remember Ari Fleischer, the press secretary for George W. Bush, yep. got up and said, I think it was about Bill Maher, sort of saying that the people, that the terrorists who hit the World Trade Center were not cowards. He said that, and Ari Fleischer said, you need to watch what you say. And everybody kind of went, whoa. What's going on here? And anybody who, of course, even looked halfway like they might be Muslim, they were definitely on notice to be very careful about what they said in public after 9/11.
And Bill Maher was subsequently fired from his job at the time for having made those comments. Driftglass, since you actually have a podcast satirically called the Professional Left Podcast, well, you may be the actual closest thing that there actually is to a professional or organized left at this point, Drifty. Are you feeling post 9/11-y? You're either with us or with the terrorists. Are you feeling that yet this week yourself?
Yeah, we're the first to go up against the wall. You know that. It's in the title. I would like to thank the Reichstag fire comparators for acknowledging that they are Nazis, because that's what the Reichstag fire was. So way to go, guys. Way to know history. Excellent. Excellent. Great job. We're feeling it here, but you can't fire a podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we just keep going on and on and on. We have seen it happen in our community. Mm-hmm. We have seen this happen frequently. I know that Matthew Dowd, it pained me to say this, but Matthew Dowd should not have been fired. Mm-hmm. Matthew Dowd should never have been hired in the first place. I have a long, long litany of things against him, but he should not have been fired.
He's over at, for people who don't know, he's at over MSNBC. At MSNBC. Yeah.
He said, used to be.
And basically he said he was asked about what, you mm-hmm. know, how this sort of thing happens. And he said, well, hate speech essentially begets hate speech. And then hate speech eventually begets political violence. And for that, he was fired. And by the way, that was even after he apologized for saying that, which I don't know that an apology was due there, but I think people heard it as saying Charlie Kirk deserved to be shot or something, which he obviously was not saying. Nonetheless, he lost his job. So continue.
The Dixie Chicks, now the Chicks, you might recall, had a house dropped on them when they said a few mean words about George Bush.
Yep.
The record sales. So there was immediate, massive blowback. The Weekly Standard at that point had a gentleman named David Brooks writing for them. And I mean, they were writing some extraordinarily hateful stuff about the left and how stupid we are and how fools we are, mm-hmm. how anti-Semitic we are for opposing the military genius that was George W. Bush. Now, in our little town here at a local radio station that shall go unnamed, a local radio host, who's conservative, as they all are, hosted a former member of the mainstream media named Chuck Todd this week.
Mm.
And Chuck Todd came in with guns blazing, man. Both sides are to blame. Both sides are at fault. Isn't it awful? How can we do this? The left and the right, the left and the right, and really the left's even worse. And he remembers 9/11 as a great time of unity and respectful debate, because Chuck Todd is that guy. And that's what happens down here at the ground level. That report, that conversation will never be heard in the mainstream media. But right down here where it counts, there are people who are just, there are vigils, there are candlelit parades. There's a woman lost her job on the local television station. She resigned and then was subsequently fired because she had a tearful tribute to Charlie Kirk on her show, which was not a news show, but she decided that what she needed to do, she was a former intern of his, mm-hmm. and was employed by him, and he was her mentor. But she went off on this long, tearful rant about how wonderful he is and how great he was and a free speech champion, which was entirely inappropriate for that venue. But I assume she's, now that she's lost her job here, she will find a lovely position somewhere on Fox News or Newsmax. She's on that trajectory. So things are happening on the ground that don't get reported nationally that are disturbing, but entirely predictable, because I disagree with Thigpen about one thing. This didn't start with Donald Trump. They have been demonizing the left as responsible for everything wrong with this country for at least the last 35 years. Mm. And the rhetoric has finally caught up with actual action being taken at the highest level of the White House, and the hypocrisy of, there's an impeachment, papers being filed against our governor by the Illinois Freedom Caucus for the use of his vile language.
What's his vile language?
He said some things about, you know, the never give them a moment's peace, and the president is fomenting this sort of thing. Hmm. And the Illinois Freedom Caucus, the subset of the Republican Party, is just horrified by this. Horrified.
And that's despite the language that you heard from the president at the top of this show about how it's the Democrats who are fascists and communists. Absolutely. And Marxists, and that they are the enemy within.
100%.
And by the way, I got more on this, but I have a quick sidebar here since we've been talking about 9/11 and how, you know, if I hear one person talk about how we all came together after 9/11, am I the only one? This has been bugging me for 25 years. No, we did not all come together after 9/11, even in the immediate aftermath. Am I the only one that felt that way? Did everybody else come together and didn't invite me?
I wasn't coming together.
Okay.
Now, I should say that I remember for maybe 24 hours, actually probably until the sunrise the next morning, that people were slightly nicer to each other. Slightly. Yeah. Very. But that was it.
Oh, yeah.
And we also had
less than a day.
We also had firemen out with their boots collecting money for the first responders. That was all great. that was all, you know, heroic and admirable and noble. All the people who rushed in to help were wonderful, and nothing but respect for them and the terrible price they paid for doing that. But politically, man, this was just, this was a Thanksgiving turkey gift to people who desperately wanted to go to war and desperately wanted to put and muzzle the rest of us.
Which yes. is what I felt immediately. That's what I'm sort of referring to.
Yeah, and remember, the Republicans in Congress had the Patriot Act pretty much ready to go within just weeks, which would normally have taken a lot longer than that. So it seems like they had that ready to fly.
That was sort of conspiratorial of you there, Des.
Yes.
Okay. On Monday, despite no evidence having been released at all at that point regarding the motive of Charlie Kirk's killer, Vice President J.D. Vance, who had guest hosted Kirk's show that day on Monday in Kirk's absence, he attributed, quote, left-wing extremism as, quote, part of the reason that Kirk was killed. He then went on to make this sort of extraordinary claim about political violence in America.
In a country of 330 million people, you can, of course, find one person of a given political persuasion justifying this or that or almost anything. But the data is clear. People on the left are much likelier to defend and celebrate political violence. This is not a both sides problem. If both sides have a problem, one side has a much bigger and malignant problem, and that is the truth we must be told.
Digby, I think the fact that so many late night comedians seem to pick up on that particular clip in and of itself might speak to how absurd the assertion is. But let me just tee it up for you. Your comments in response.
Well, let's just say that J.D. Vance, you know, is wrong. How about that? All the statistics, every study that's been done, our own eyes have shown us over the last, I don't know, again, I'll go back to Drift Glass's time frame there, at least 25 years, has shown that right-wing violence is by far the greater threat than, you know, left-wing violence. Mm-hmm. And this is clear. I actually think most people know that, and I think it's one of the reasons why you're seeing the polling that you referenced mm-hmm. in your opening going the way that it is, because there's something really off about these kinds of blanket lies that they're spewing. And you know, this is Vance sitting in the White House mm-hmm. doing Charlie Kirk's podcast.
Yes.
And saying, and just spewing a lie, and something that I just think people really do understand. Now, they may feel that there is, an uptick in left-wing violence. Maybe people see this or feel it. It just seems to me like we're pretty much, I mean, on the same day that Kirk was shot, there was a school shooting in Colorado in which it was a young neo-Nazi kid who shot two of his classmates, and he had a full manifesto and everything. And that neo-Nazi, I mean, that's not, I mean, they want to say that that's left, as they, you know, all these fatuous idiots have been saying for years. Yes. It's not left. It's right. It defines the right. It is the right.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, it's nonsensical, but on the other hand, it's kind of, you know, they're reaching this point where they are just not even trying anymore to, you know, but pretend that there's any kind of shared reality that we have. They're not making any attempt to try and keep it within bounds that people who are not necessarily completely brainwashed by the MAGA cult might be able to say, well, you know, they've got a point. Maybe this is, I mean, they're just not even trying anymore. I mean, Vance said, and I don't want to digress, but he said just this week, he said that, and Trump said the same thing about the Venezuela, you know, them shooting boats out of the water, mm-hmm. saying, well, fishermen better be careful if they're out there in the water. Maybe they ought to not be fishing anymore. And you're going, what? You know, you're saying that fishermen are being blown out of the water, or that it's possible that they will be? I mean, mm-hmm. this is the level that we've sunk to here.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Sorry, no, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just thinking how, you know, that contrast between, oh, my God, these people are saying horrible, horrible, mean mm-hmm. things about Charlie Kirk, and you can't be allowed to do that. It leads to political violence. And then here they are literally, Trump and Vance, literally joking about bombing civilians off the coast of Venezuela. J.D. Vance at some rally was inviting the audience to join with him in laughing at the fact that, you know, people aren't fishing out there anymore because they might die. So glorifying violence and finding it funny.
And of course, that's what they did for months after the attack with a hammer.
Yes.
Cracking open the skull of Paul Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi's husband, continuing to make jokes about it. We played it on this show since Kirk's shooting. Donald Trump going to the California Republican convention and making jokes about Paul Pelosi while he was still recovering from this horrific attack. So, yeah, you know, hypocrisy are them for sure. But I want to read this this letter. This is from what's the guy's name here? Clay Higgins. It's not just, you know, Attorney General Pam Bondi and J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller who is using this event, this tragedy for their own hopeful political fortune. But it's not just Pam Bondi who seems to have forgotten that Republicans were supposed to pretend that they support free speech. That they're, you know, they've long argued, including Charlie Kirk, that there is no such thing as hate speech, much less hate speech that we should arrest people for, as Pam Bondi had started the week saying. She's since sort of walked that back since she got such opprobrium from both the right and the left. But Clay Higgins, this congressman from Louisiana, he sent a letter to the heads of six social media platforms on Monday, threatening investigations if they do not censor speech that is critical of Charlie Kirk. Now, the letters went to the heads of Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, Donald Trump's failing social media site, and Blue Sky, which is headed by a woman named Jay Graber. She is a woman. And the letter begins, "Gentlemen, thank you for the service you provide to our republic, and may God be with you and your family. America is suffering under the dark weight of horror after the graphic televised murder of heroic Christian leader Mr. Charlie Kirk. I ask that you reflect upon your own unique responsibility to participate in the very appropriate, legal, and constitutionally sound response." Sounds like this is going to be an inappropriate, illegal, and unconstitutional sound response, but that's just
pretty
a guess.
Sure.
He says, "Please be advised that your platforms are rightly expected to expeditiously remove all posts that have celebrated the political assassination of Charlie Kirk. Further, the authors of these posts are to be identified and banned from your platform, as well as any new pages they may create. Gleeful celebration of the heinous murder of an American citizen brazenly published within the public forums of social media is not to be tolerated within the accepted and legal parameters of a free and humane society, and I have initiated a congressional effort to force accountability. If you shield these offenders, Section 230 of the law will not protect you from your platform, etc. The reasonable restriction of public statements that lie far beyond the standards of our own society is not an oppression of free speech," he says. "It is rather the protection of free speech." War is peace, up is down, and so forth. That's respectfully Clay Higgins, member of Congress. Lots to respond to there, but didn't congressional Republicans throw a fit, Driftglass, when they claim that Joe Biden was somehow using the threat of federal power against social media companies before the 2016 election, back when, by the way, as it turns out, Donald Trump was actually president and in control of the federal government at the time, not Joe Biden. But this would seem to be the actual government censorship and threat against, you know, free speech that Republicans claim that Democrats were somehow doing at the time, no?
If you're going to split hairs about it, sure, that's all true. But remember, the entire Republican Party, the entirety of conservative media is engaged in a vast performance art directed at their own base. They do not give a damn about us, about hypocrisy, about anything. They don't care because they get no power from us. They get all of their power from the tens of millions of bigots and imbeciles who voted them into office. and who send them money and who believe every word they say. So all of this, all of it is being performed for the benefit of the base that they're afraid of losing because of the poll numbers you cited earlier. So they're just feeding back to what we call on the professional left, the reprogrammable meatbags on the right, what they already believe. They believe the left has a vast conspiracy and they're, everyone's in on it. So that's what they say. Doesn't matter that it's true or not. Doesn't matter that they're lying because no one in their own universe will check them on it because they all want to believe it. In Neuromancer by William Gibson, wonderful book. He coined a phrase called the consensual hallucination. And that's what they're all engaged in. They have hallucinated into existence a vast left-wing conspiracy, sneaky liberal media, lots of awfulness going on that justifies everything that they do. And so you have, and this has been set up for 40 years now, that the left is always worse. We are always a threat. And there's always a justification for escalation against the enemy within. And one more thing, if I may. Back in 2009 or 2010, as I recall, the Department of Homeland Security published a report called Right-Wing Extremism, Current Economic and Political Climate, Fueling Resurgence in Radicalization and Recruitment. Do you remember how that went over on the right? They went ballistic. They went ape. Michelle Malkin lost her mind. John Boehner, Matt Lewis, Bill Kristol called it juvenile. I have it all right in front of me. And so it was shelved. Because not because it wasn't true, but because pressure from the right demanded that they shut up about it. Because we can't be going around telling the truth about the fact the right is violent, that their rhetoric is intentional, and their target are people that they don't agree with and they want out of their way as they push through a fascist agenda. And always have been.
I should also note that the 404 Media reported this week that the Trump DOJ once again, disappeared a National Institute of Justice study that concluded that white supremacists and far-right violence, quote, continues to outpace all other types of terrorism and domestic violent extremism in the United States. That report was there on the DOJ website on the day that Charlie Kirk was shot and killed. For some reason, it is no longer available via the DOJ website.
One more item about that report. The author... or authors, plural, of that report came back into the news in 2022 to say, if we had taken action, then we could have stopped January 6th. But we were told not to. It was stand down. We were cast aside. We were discredited. We were told to shut up. We could have prevented the insurrection against the American Capitol, which was fomented and led by the President of the United States. But we had to stand down, and so... these lunatics were left to run free.
It's remarkable.
It's a direct cause and effect relationship, and it's happening again right in front of us.
And it's remarkable that that report was not taken down previously. But you're right about the point that you know, this is performative for their base, that they create their own reality. In fact, you know, they will say they tried to kill Donald Trump last year in Pennsylvania, despite the fact that it was this you know, registered Republican who fired the shots. Digby, if not ban or censor hate speech by the federal government, as Clay Higgins now seems to be calling for on social media, and as both Pam Bondi and Donald Trump himself called for this week, using the idea of hate speech to throw you in jail, if not that, how do you feel about perhaps using this moment to talk about social media outlets changing their algorithms so as not to work people into this, you know, fury where they are willing to go out in real life and take a shot at someone? Is there a way to do that without the big boot of government forcing censorship on social media outlets?
Well, you're asking the wrong person, because I am not an expert by any means on whether or not that would work, number one. I do know that what we just learned this week was that they have made the government has made an agreement with yet another right-wing conglomerate to take over TikTok.
Yeah.
That would be Larry Ellison, the CEO and inventor of Oracle. Mm-hmm. I think his son, and Mark Andreessen. Mm-hmm. And these are very, very right-wing people along the same lines as Elon Musk. And Ellison was behind the new Skydance, which just acquired Paramount and CBS News, and is now talking about taking over CNN. So if people are looking for some kind of sort of, a response from the owners of media to try to find a way to tamp down violence in the context of what we were just talking about, right-wing violence, which is basically, you know, taking over the country, I don't think we should hold our breath. Because these are not people who are inclined to do such a thing. They are basically going to work on behalf of these right-wing elements that are attempting to intimidate at least any dissenters in this country and crack down. Stephen Miller said this week on that podcast with the Charlie Kirk in the White House late Charlie Kirk in the White House podcast, mm-hmm. with God as my witness, we're going to use every resource we have at the Department of Justice, Homeland Security, and throughout this government to identify, disrupt, dismantle, and destroy these networks and make America safe again. For the American people, it will happen, and we will do it in Charlie's name. That's Stephen Miller, who is the second most, maybe the most powerful person in the U.S. government. Right. And I would say that the combination of a bunch of rich right-wing people now owning and, you know, apparently hoovering up every media company in the country, and that guy in charge of the U.S. government, I'm not gonna get my hopes up that we're gonna see any kind of responsible sort of, attack against what's the algorithms and what's been going on in our social media. I just don't think we're going to see it. I think it's going to get worse, to be honest. I hate to be a pessimist, but I honestly believe it.
I don't think you're the only pessimist. I think that that acquisition of TikTok by Ellison and all of the sort of this consolidation of, this is basically what we're seeing, a really rapid consolidation of media by the billionaire oligarchs. And I think that is, that's putting it all in the hands of just a few people, the entire information flow. And I think that that's really, really dangerous.
With all of that good news, let me take a quick break here. And we will come back with some of the other stuff that has been and will be going on, including Trump's attempt to start a war with Venezuela, his attempts to start a war with Chicago, his laughable, I think, $15 billion lawsuit against the New York Times, and whatever else we have time for, including that whole thing about that guy named Jeffrey Epstein. Remember him? That was, Republicans used to have some concern about. We'll see if we have time for any of it ourselves. All of that straight ahead on today's broadcast as Digby and Driftglass stick with us for the full hour today. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Alright, welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Catching up with as much as we can today, and there's more than we're going to be able to catch up to. Some of you who listen to our premium extra hour for subscribers only will have to enjoy that. Don't laugh. We have one.
No, we
do. It's just we do. I just haven't told you about it. Anyway, Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Driftglass of Pro Left Podcast are here with us. Digby, on Tuesday, Trump sort of offhandedly revealed, or at least claimed to reporters, that the United States had attacked or destroyed or quote, knocked off, in his words, a third alleged drug smuggling boat off the coast of Venezuela. He had not previously mentioned this third. He had previously trumpeted the attacks on two boats on his failing social media site as part of a warning to Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. The White House would not offer any additional details on this third boat. All of this wildly disturbing to me, not to mention unlawful and very little covered right now. What is going on here as you see it, Heather Digby Parton?
Well, it appears to me that Trump is preparing to, you know, under the right circumstances, I think that we could see an actual invasion of Venezuela. Now, you say that's crazy, it's nuts. But they have a whole flotilla outside of Venezuela in of, you know, all these naval ships, destroyers, and they're doing all this provocative stuff. They're, you know, and talking about blowing fishermen out of the water and trying. So far, the Venezuelan government hasn't taken the bait. There's a $50 million bounty on the head of Nicolas Maduro, the president. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so far they haven't taken the bait. But honestly, I would not be, let's just put it this way. I don't know if that's the plan, but if you listen to Marco Rubio, and this is his baby, I mean, I hate to say it, but I mean, this guy has, I don't know what happened to him. It's something in the water, something happened, but he has gone completely nuts when it comes to South America. Mm-hmm. And when it comes down, you know, I mean, I guess, well, we don't have to spend too much time examining his motives, but whatever, he's the guy who's kind of pushing this. And there are others apparently in the administration who are kind of, ooh, maybe not, maybe we don't want to do this. And one of the things, I mean, this week we had a guy named John Yoo. I'm sure you guys all remember him, right?
Yes,
the guy, the author of the torture memo after 9/11 that legalized the torture and rendition of all those people. It was one of the ugliest, most heinous events in our in that era and really in American history, mm-hmm. in which they legalized torture, and it was disgusting. He came out saying that what the Trump administration's doing is illegal. And he said, you know, it needs to make a stronger case than it's been making so far about why the law should consider cartels to be enemies of war. They are not enemies of war. And that is, you know, now, granted, the Supreme Court may step in here and say, oh, yes, they are. The king of America can declare anybody an enemy of war. And I won't be surprised to see that. But for the moment, it's illegal.
I don't think they care that it's illegal. And by the way, I don't think they care that even John Yoo said something like that. Remember, he's W. Bush Republican. Put him in the pot with John Bolton, and John Yoo should be expected to have his house invaded by the FBI anytime. Driftglass, very quickly, I don't think it's insane at all, to Heather's point, it's insane that we may be going to war with Venezuela. I don't think it's insane at all. I think we almost absolutely will be doing exactly that. What do you think's going on here?
Well, on the other side of all these very good arguments is the fact that 300 million Americans die of drug overdoses every year.
300 million of the 330 million that
a
exist.
Year. Yes. Every year.
So I think, you know, come on, man. I mean, something must be done. If we're doing that, then people who own cars should be up against the wall before people who row fishing boats down by Venezuela. And then cracking up about it. And not since George Bush knocked him dead with his "I haven't found the WMD" bit. Have people been rolling on the floor as a president just laughs about the fact that he's killed a lot of people and nobody really cares. I think that he thinks somehow this is the next step. He wants to consolidate the hemisphere. He wants Canada. He wants Greenland. And he wants a big chunk of South America. And it wouldn't surprise me if he thinks this will get him a Nobel Prize. And this is how Putin did Ukraine. Just provoke, provoke, provoke until they strike back and say, well, what choice do we have? We must go.
What kind of a Nobel Prize? The Nobel War Prize? I mean, sure.
Why not?
Here's what I think is going on. Tell me if I'm nuts. I believe all of this goes back to his claim during the campaign that the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua had completely taken over control of the city of Aurora, Colorado. I don't know if people remember this because...
Oh, yes, eating the dogs.
No,
eating the dogs.
That was Springfield. That
was separate.
Right. This was separate. This was all over Fox News that gang members, Tren de Aragua gangs, had taken over an entire city of Aurora, Colorado, much to, I think, the surprise of this... residents of Aurora, Colorado at the time. But anyway, he made that claim. It was utter nonsense. But since then, he can't be wrong. So therefore, right. Tren de Aragua is waging war on America. He used the Alien Enemies Act to remove them or to try to remove them. But they can only be removed under the Alien Enemies Act if we're actually at war with Venezuela. Or more specifically, them with us, but that's a small distinction for him, I think. So he's trying to create that war that justifies his lie going back all the way to the campaign, and that would now allow him to use the Alien Enemies Act to remove every Venezuelan that he can. Digby, prove me wrong.
No. No, I cannot prove you wrong because you are right.
And
there is even an additional little extra on all this. And that is that Venezuela is sitting on a big old pool, ocean of oil.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
Yep. And as we know, I mean, it's the biggest oil, you know, reserves in, other, I think, bigger even than Alaska in our hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And he wants it. He said the other day, he said, we're not going to do any of this alternative energy. We're going back to fossil fuels. You got to be smart. So if you're going to go back to fossil fuels, I think you got to get some fossil fuel. Mm-hmm. And he's going to go there and he wants to take it. And as he said about the wars in the Middle East, mm-hmm. I was very much against Iraq. I didn't think we should go into Iraq, but once we're there, we should have kept the oil.
Yep.
So we know that that's how he looks at these things. So between the, proving himself right about Tren de Aragua, which, by the way, Tren de Aragua and Maduro are not in cahoots.
Right.
Tren de Aragua is that it's just not true. It's not happening. You know what is true? The guy in El Salvador, Bukele, his big buddy, he is in cahoots with MS-13, uh-huh. the other big drug gang that he is supposedly against. But, different story.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yes, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that he is proving himself right. They're using that as an excuse. And their overarching goal, I think, is to get a hold of those oil.
And I am amazed that this is going on, never mind that it's illegal, it's against U.S. law, it's against international law, but that it's going on and it's receiving so little coverage, despite the fact that these are acts of war. And as you say, there were, as of a week ago, at least 10 warships surrounding Venezuela. There may be more now. The fact that folks aren't talking about it, the fact that the so-called organized left is not out there, I'm sorry, the professional left is not out there protesting about no war in Venezuela. It's like nobody even knows about it because of everything else that's going on. And speaking of everything else that is going on, Driftglass... Since this is sort of a local story to you of a sort out there in Springfield, Illinois, the last time we spoke last month, I think, it seemed like Trump was going to be sending U.S. troops into Chicago imminently. He recently posted on his failing social media site that Chicago was about to see why he calls it the Department of War, along with the phrase, Chipocalypse Now, play on Apocalypse Now. But none of that has yet to happen, Drifty.
Nope.
Any idea why?
Oh, because of the Professional Left podcast.
I knew it. I knew it. We stood
athwart I-80 and said, turn back.
Good.
And turned back.
Well done.
Like the Spartans at the hot gates, the Professional Left was there.
Good.
Just
good.
Stop it.
Thank
no,
you.
It was, I'm not privy to the internal consultations of our governor, but our governor was very, very clear that this will not stand, that he put other Midwest governors on notice that if you send your National Guard troops here, I will remember. And he has the money and the clout to back it up. There's nobody going to beat him in the next election. Even the Republicans down here say that you just can't beat this guy right now. That's just not in the cards. So I think Trump just tacoed again.
Mm.
You push back hard enough and he will chicken out and find someone else to pick on. Mm. There used to be a guy named J.J. Bittenbinder who do anti-crime lectures. And one of the things he explained was make yourself more difficult, because the person who wants to rob somebody, stick them up, they're looking for the easiest target. So if you make yourself a slightly harder target, they'll go someplace else because it's not worth the price. And I think Pritzker made the price of entering Chicago too high when there were other easier, softer targets around.
Mm.
Doesn't stop the problem, because Trump is the problem and the entire Republican Party is the problem and the voters are the problem. But in this one case, it appears that he'll settle for sending ICE agents around, hassling people and dragging them off. But it's a much less of a crisis than it would have been had they rolled the National Guard in.
There was talk at the time when he was most making these threats that they were going to that they were gathering National Guard or U.S. troops at a base outside of Chicago, preparing for this invasion, as it were. Is that still ongoing, to your understanding, or do you feel that it has actually been pushed back?
Well, there are two military bases in Springfield, and I think Great Lakes is still proximate. I used to drive my buddy John up there because he was in the Navy. Great Lakes is still accessible. So there's a lot of places to stage troops around here, but they do that all the time. And it might very well be they're just waiting for the signal, and then they'll blow the whistle and go over the top like World War I. But I don't see any imminent danger of it. Now, I could be wrong tomorrow because, you know, Donald Trump is nuts.
Yeah.
And as you said, he's not allowed to be wrong about anything.
Correct. Correct.
So he will make up some garbage and either do it or he'll move on. But the key, I think, is the lesson is whatever he's going to do, push back as hard as you can. The worst that's going to happen, he's going to sue you for $15 billion trillion. And that will be laughed out of court. So, you know, better be, what do they say, hung as a lion is hung as a lamb. So fight him. And if you lose, you lose. But the fight is worth it.
All right. And we got to get out here very momentarily. There was all kinds of things that I'd hoped to talk to you guys about, but not nearly enough time, including that lawsuit, that Donald Trump lawsuit, that $15 billion. And I laugh against the New York Times because, as far as I can tell, it's the basis of the suit is that Donald Trump won the election last year. Therefore, the New York Times must be nicer to him or something.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know if you guys found anything else in that suit, but that does seem to be it. That said, laughable as it may be, it was also laughable when he sued CBS and ABC, and they settled with him for millions of dollars. Digby, do you expect that's going to happen here?
I don't. And the reason is that those companies are major, corporation conglomerates that have business with the government, and Trump leveraged that to get that money. The New York Times is a standalone company, and they have only one thing going for them. And if free speech is threatened by this, you know, this cretinous moron, they don't have a company anymore. So I think they'll fight it. I'm not even sure if it'll even make it, you know, anywhere. It's the most ridiculous lawsuit you've ever read. If you get a chance to read it, do it if you like comedy. It is hilarious.
Yeah. Not unlike what our guest on the show, Keith Barber, said yesterday. He said Saturday Night Live should just take it and read it out loud.
Absolutely.
as a skit. All right, guys. Well, what we didn't get to talk about was the Epstein files. So well done, Mr. President. Also, the fact that the government is, I don't want to say almost certainly, but very likely to be shutting down entirely in just over 10 days' time.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Republicans and Democrats can come up with a plan to agree to sign a continuing resolution. I don't know that they will, but when that government shuts down, maybe it'll give us a lot more to talk about, because we never have enough to discuss. when you guys are on the show.
Oh,
so
good.
I'm sorry we ran out of time to talk about that right now, but we got to get out. Thanks again to both of you. Of course, Heather Digby Parton is the much beloved blogger and columnist at Salon.com and Digby's blog.net. You can also find her on the Blue Skies at Digby56. Driftglass is the mostly beloved blogger who can be found at, where is it?
ProfessionalLevPodcast.com.
ProfessionalLevPodcast.com and his own blog, by the way, driftglass.blogspot.com. And on the Blue Skies at Simply Driftglass. We will see you both there until we see you here next time. Thanks, guys. Greatly appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for being had. Okay, we got to get out. But hey,
yes.
Little announcement. I got a doctor's thing tomorrow that I could not work around the show schedule. So please forgive me. But we will be off tomorrow. I think we're gonna try to knock out a Green News report in the morning beforehand. Is that
yes.
correct, Desi Doyen?
That'll be fun.
We'll
yes.
see how that goes. So look out for that at least at brandblog.com tomorrow, or of course via your favorite podcast site, since we won't otherwise be able to play it on tomorrow's broadcast.
Right.
Because there won't be one.
Right.
But we will otherwise see you on Monday. My thanks again to Heather and Bill, otherwise known as Digby and Driftglass, and to all of you for and to Desi Doyen, our producer.
Yes, I'm here too.
And to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other since the beginning of time, you can download them anytime for free at bradblog.com. While you're there, you can hit a donate button. And by the way, if you subscribe to a monthly automated subscription for any amount you want, you would have access to our premium extra hour.
The super secret hour that doesn't exist.
If we ever decide to make one.
Yes.
Anyway, that's true. your support nonetheless is greatly appreciated. You can also go to bradblog.com/donate. Find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. Find Desi on the social medias, especially Blue Sky,
at Green News Report.
And that's it, right?
I think so.
Did I say drop me email? I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. I don't know. I said it again. There you go. We'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.